is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
I'm John Batchelor with Jeff Waro. The book is The Vietnam War, A Military History. 1966 and 1967. More troops coming in all the time. A man named Westmoreland is in charge of the MACV. He's supported by his president and the National Security Advisor and the Chief of Staff of the Army, the Joint Chiefs. More and more troops, Army troops, Marine troops, and a new kind of war, a helicopter war. The fleets off the coast of Vietnam launching airstrikes all the time, rolling thunder. The operations have romantic names such as Paul Revere 1234, Hawthorne. The operations resemble what we've just seen in the Yidrang Valley. So what are the phases that Westmoreland plans to show to his politicians how he's going to win the war? Phase one we've seen. It's the buildup. What is phase two, Jeff?
Well, as you say, phase one is the buildup, and the buildup is not to be sneezed at because it requires like building dozens of air bases around Vietnam, container ports, base camps, you know, petroleum and ammunition storage depots all over the country. So the country, South Vietnam, a country about the size of Montana, is carved into this, you know, they build something like 8,000 fire bases in the course of the war. And you still see these all over the country when you drive around southern Vietnam today. You'll see on every hilltop, there's the remains of an asphalt helipad and a perimeter fence where they would have these networks of artillery. So wherever you launched an operation in any part of South Vietnam, you were within range, you know, 15 miles basically of one of these fire bases. And then you have to have airstrips for fixed wing aircraft. And then you need container ports so you don't just bring your supplies over the beach, but you can have warehouses and you have so that's like phase one. In addition to these early, you know, uses of the air mobile concept in battles like Yidrang. And then you're going to proceed to this like sort of swinging attack on the enemy where you've got enough American personnel and equipment in country that you can now take the fight to the enemy. And you can, and this is the idea, you know, Johnson like clings to this hope, you know, throughout, you know, the rest of his presidency that he's going to be able to land a blow so punishing to the communists that they're going to say, you know what, let's just negotiate and agree to a two-state solution for Vietnam and get on with living. But so this next phase is going to be you're going to launch these really crushing operations that are going to kill so many North Vietnamese regulars and Viet Cong guerrillas that recruiting for the Viet Cong is going to dry up and North Vietnam is going to become unwilling to keep sending guys down the Ho Chi Minh Trail. But, you know, that's phase two. And that's going to be, you know, 1966, 1967. And, you know, Westmoreland talks about, you know, ending the war by 1968, basically when you can now take the U.S. combat forces that have been killing NVA and Viet Cong, and you can now like unleash them against the, you know, the guerrillas and create village security in a pacification campaign, and then you've got the country now under control by 68, and that's when the U.S. hands over the war to an improved, well trained, motivated South Vietnamese army, and the U.S. exits the war, leaving behind this like viable South Vietnam. That's the plan, but we never even get within sniffing distance of that plan because of the difficulties of this war, chief among them that search and destroy is premised on finding the enemy and destroying the enemy. And then the whole metric of success will be body count. The problem is 90% or more of U.S. and ARVN search and destroy operations between 1965 and 1969 make no contact with the enemy. They just, it's a swing and a miss because the enemy knows. They know what's coming. They can see an American search and destroy operation or ARVN search and destroy operations shaping up because it's always preceded by the construction of these fire bases, the construction of a battalion headquarters, company bases, you know, around the battalion headquarters, walks in the sun by the grunts, patrolling, looking for the enemy, you know, Otter spy planes overhead, looking down, looking for the enemy. They know what, they know exactly what's coming, so they disappear. And they wait for the Americans to exhaust themselves, and they go somewhere else. So we do have big operations, which I talk about in the book. But even some of the biggest ones, like Junction City in 1967, you know, they're most notable for like really not finding the enemy, because the enemy bugs out and says, let's get out and we'll go. We'll live to fight another day. That's the whole North Vietnamese theory of victory. Live to fight another day, protract the war, make it financially and politically painful in the United States by running up the casualties, running up the costs, and fraying their patience.
In the future is a disaster for Cambodia. And we note it here. Remember, this is a political war. Lyndon Johnson knew the man, Prince Sihanouk, who was the head of the regime in Cambodia, the neighboring Cambodia. The favorite was General Lon Nol in 66, a prime minister. However, he couldn't have him right away because Sihanouk was in charge and the people worshipped him. There was a rebellion in the country, Khmer Rouge, that will lead to the massacre of millions of people in the future. I mentioned it here. It's not time to divert into it, but the U.S. will eventually send an incursion into Cambodia. And Vietnam did not only destroy the Vietnamese people, it destroyed Cambodian people, Laotian people. And I mention that because at this point, Jeff, was the operations in Cambodia, any probes, the bombing, all of that, was that secret at this point in 66, 67?
Yeah, well, they're not even probing. I mean, Johnson doesn't want any violations of that border. They're not going to probe until Nixon starts the secret bombing in March of 1969, after taking office in January of that year, and escalates that throughout 69. And then 70, he sends troops, American troops, into Cambodia to attack the supply dumps, the NVA supply dumps, which are just over the border from South Vietnam.
So there was no attempt at this point to destabilize Cambodia. Is that correct?
No. That's what's one of the most interesting things. Revisionists will often like kind of grasp at Cambodia and say, if only, you know, we had gone into Cambodia harder and earlier and cleaned it out and done the same to Laos, then the NVA wouldn't have been able to infiltrate South Vietnam and wouldn't have been able to supply the Viet Cong insurgency along this Ho Chi Minh Trail, which runs along the South Vietnamese border through Laos and Cambodia and then branches into South Vietnam. So we should have gone into those we should have gone in and taken the sanctuaries. There was no taking these sanctuaries. These countries were these big, vast, largely uninhabited, trackless, roadless jungles. And the North Vietnamese army had made them their own, like just by this. They built roads, they built pipelines, they built base camps and everything else. We could go in, as we do in 1970, as the Arvin does in 1971, and we can capture a bunch of, you know, ammo and medicine and motor vehicle parks and whatnot, and burn the lot and then go back out. But they're just going to come back in again. And the only way to sort of prevent it happening is to take over these countries, because both countries are in the grip of China, which has predominant influence in both, and B, in the grip of their guerrilla armies, the Pathet Lao in Laos, communists, and the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, communists. And the only way to keep these people on the sidelines was to concede the neutrality. And neutrality is frankly being abused by the North Vietnamese, but the U.S. simply doesn't have the forces, the money, or the patience to go in and hold these places for a long period of time. And the U.S. risks international odium by going into these technically neutral countries and invading them, as we do in 1970 and 71, earning that international odium for no net gain, because all the inroads we make are rapidly made good by the enemy after we leave. So this was something that Johnson was aware of, and revisionists seem to suggest that he's somehow weak-kneed or irresolute, when in fact it was just he was facing facts. You know, Kennedy had negotiated the neutrality of Laos in 1961, and within like 2 months of the treaty being signed, the communists were violating it, and Kennedy could not. He had nothing to do about it because he would have had to go in, and he asked the Joint Chiefs, "What would it take for me to go in and get a real neutrality in Laos?" so the communists would stop using it to infiltrate South Vietnam. And the Joint Chiefs said, you know, at least 60,000 U.S. troops, at least, at a minimum. That's the down payment. And Kennedy's like, well, obviously, I'm not going to do that. So the only thing they could do was observe the neutrality, try to fight the war inside South Vietnam, but really try to sort of bolster the South Vietnamese military and make them stand on their own, which is exactly what we don't do in the Vietnam War.
The book is The Vietnam War, A Military History. Jeff Warrow is the author. When we come back, The Tet Offensive.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big.